Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
John Chabowski has supported Independent Tech News directly for 5 years. Be like John. Become a DTNS member at patreon.com/DTNS. This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, January 9th, 2018, from the Las Vegas Convention Center at CES 2019. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Shannon Morse.
Hey, I am Robert Herron.
And Robert, of course, here from AVXL and expert on all things HDTV. Good to have you.
Absolutely love it. Thank
Shannon,
you.
Of course, from ThreatWire and TechThing. And I want to get the name right. Sailor Snubs.
My new YouTube channel.
The YouTube channel. And all of us have been crowding the show floor. Our producer, Roger Chang, is here. His mic will work on the Hangout.
Hello. It works on the Hangout.
Yeah. So we'll navigate around that. But we still have a lot to talk about. Maybe not as much as the last couple of days, but still a lot. So let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Yesterday, we passed along Google's assertion that Google Assistant would indeed come to Sonos speakers in 2019 after missing the original 2018 target. And today, Sonos itself announced, yes, it started a private beta test of Google Assistant on its smart speakers for a 2019 launch. Google Assistant would directly integrate into Sonos One and Beam speakers, and older Sonos models will work in conjunction with Google Homes and similar smart speakers.
Allison Sheridan alerted us on Monday's show to a robot Tesla collision, and now has alerted us to Electrek's article noting that the Tesla collision with a promobot may have been staged. We regret any misimpression we may have given and denounce the sacrifice of innocent robot lives in the name of public relations.
Tough stuff. Yale and MTech are showing off smart door locks that run August smart lock software. The parent company of both locks also owns August, so this isn't a huge surprise. But it is interesting to see that the software is moving to non-August platforms without the need to purchase additional equipment. The MTech models are $390 coming in April, or $440 with a keypad coming in February. The Yale lock is meant for interior or basement or side doors in versions with keys, keypads, and touch screens. They range from $149 to $299 shipping in Q1.
LG is going to use Microsoft Azure DataBox AI service in its advanced driver assistance systems, driver status monitoring camera, and multi-purpose front camera, which is providing to an unidentified premium German automaker. There aren't that many of them, so you probably have a good chance of guessing which one it is. It's using Azure's virtual assistant solution accelerator for traffic updates, restaurant listings, and music. Microsoft's also partnering with Volkswagen on an automotive cloud. So Microsoft's starting to move into this space a little bit, too.
Some good news for those of us with more than one Instagram account, perhaps a Finsta. The iOS version will now allow you to post a photo or video to multiple accounts at once. CEO Kevin Systrom told Wired back in 2017 that the company preferred to focus on authenticity and user connections by not allowing things like regrams and multi-post within Instagram itself. But Systrom has since left the company, and it looks like it's a new world.
Just in time for us not to be able to cross-post at CES.
Maybe
thank
for
you.
The next year, Tom.
Instagram. All right, let's talk about some of the cool things we've been seeing at CES. We've been keeping you up on the big news and the press announcements. But once you get into Wednesday, it starts to be a little bit flexible about what you want to talk about. And Robert Herron, obviously, seeing all the TVs and the home theater stuff out there. Robert, let's start with, I actually want to ask you a question. Mini LEDs, that's sort of the trend buzzword this CES. What are mini LEDs? What are they good for? Why are we hearing so much about it?
Certainly. It's an easy upgrade, but the main benefit would be that
the ability to control the backlight on an LCD television will be much more granular. Instead of having large blocky zones, like if you've ever looked at an edge-lit TV where it has just LEDs along one side of it, you literally have stripes of zone control that are gigantic. And it's really hard to have edges that can have a high bright zone and then pitch black next to it. So if you can increase the number of LEDs behind the screen, and in this case, we're talking hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, you will end up not only more, I think, a picture that comes closer to looking like OLED looks like in terms of being able to produce those inky dark blacks, yet minimize the blooming artifacts and other things that can occur when you're dealing with high contrast content.
Excellent.
Seriously.
What is one of the things that has caught your eye the most?
Well, a couple, too. Well, start right off the bat with TCL's 8 series. That's an example of a TV that's being upgraded. If you consider what the 6 series was, super popular, affordable, and it supported things like Dolby Vision and HDR10. The 8 series is going to add, for the first time, quantum dot technology for improved color performance.
We're seeing that in a lot more TVs now, you're saying.
And they're quoting hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of micro LEDs on the back of the TV. So I'm guessing it's at least 300 LEDs, 300 zones, so to speak. But right nearby, at the Hisense booth, they were showing off a large format display, 8K, that will be out later this year, that had, quote-unquote, 5,376 LEDs driving behind the panel. So very good granularity in terms of light control and everything like that. And apparently they even have a retailer ready to go. So this is something that will actually show up.
Everybody wants to know out there, like, why do I care about 8K? Is there a reason yet?
I personally think that once you hit certain screen sizes, especially large screen sizes in particular, it's just nice to have the pixels be about the same size, say, as a 65-inch or a 55-inch 4K TV. Because if you just simply scale the size of the panel up, the pixels need to get larger and larger and larger. And if you tend to sit a little closer, you're going to notice that. So by having literally 4 times the amount of pixels compared to an 8K screen or compared to a 4K screen, you're just going to have a better experience, especially if you sit closer. The other thing is, it is going to require additional processing because there is no 8K content, really.
Yeah.
So you're going to need something that can take your 4K content, or let alone HD or SD content, and scale that properly and make it look really good. And I've seen lots of demos where 4K Blu-ray on an 8K screen, I really had a hard time seeing a difference between that and native 8K content on the screen itself.
So would an 8K screen make more sense in like a big business platform, like in a stadium or a studio or something like that?
At any distance beyond where you could appreciate the detail, it really wouldn't be necessary. That's where you could get away, especially for something like outdoor signage or things like that. One nice thing about the 8K screen is literally you could quad split it and have 4 4K streams going at once.
That's always a feature
I would want. Let me have crazy sports day with multiple things in high quality where I'm not really having to sacrifice the resolution per se.
Now, I know you've been seeing a lot of laser projectors, very hard-working laser projectors at some crazy prices, and one in particular that turned your head.
Tons of killer deals. So if you've been considering something that replaces the lamp module with a laser-based system, LG recently introduced their short throw design that gives you a dual-color laser system for improved color. But the one that really caught my eye was, again, over at the Hisense booth. They're actually showing off, the first time I've seen in a consumer unit, 3-color laser, red, blue, and green as the primary colors being driven to, in this case, it was just a 70-inch screen, but even in its prototype stage, it looked fantastic, and they're talking about having this in the stores before the end of the year. And if you compare other companies that do currently make 3-color laser projectors, we're talking pricing in, like, starting at $50,000 and quickly getting up into 6 figures. And having this true 3-color laser system is going to be necessary for achieving the full quality of things like BT2020 that's part of the HDR spec, a super wide color palette with very saturated red, blues, greens. And this is really the way to do it. And it's going to be less than $20,000. I'm thinking it's going to be closer to $15,000 when it comes out later this year. And with the proper calibration set up on that, that could be one of the very best-looking displays you could have in your home theater.
Yeah, for you high-end home theater people. Not me, but for you.
And also, they call it a smart TV, too, because
if you can afford that, back our Patreon.
They do integrate smart functionality into a lot of these products nowadays.
And finally, speaking of Hisense, I know you saw one cool Hisense technology that's turned some engineers' heads.
This was crazy. They actually have a 4K screen coming out later this year, and I forget which model it is off the top of my head, but the cool thing about it is it's a 4K panel, but they bonded a 1080p screen to the back of that very precisely with a very well-done gap that is very even, because if there's any kind of distortion there, you're going to end up screwing up the whole picture. But the deal is that the backlighting system then is basically controlled by that 1080p screen before it hits the color filter and the 4K panel itself. So you end up with, effectively, for every 4 pixels on that LED, on the LED screen up front, you've got a pure control system for it behind it, being able to use that 1080p screen to turn off the backlight completely in those areas. And overall, it was just providing really good off-axis viewing in addition to just superb contrast and the local dimming control. Even on things that are technically really challenging, like curved objects, like a soccer ball, once it rolled into the screen, the blooming artifacts were all but gone. Yeah. And it is another one of those products where it's coming sooner than later. And like you mentioned, all of the big players in TV manufacturing were sending teams of engineers out to actually get close up with these TVs, including doing very precise measurements with very expensive gear.
Wow.
I mean, Samsung, Sony, and LG, I think they all sent squads out to go take a look.
Using a 1080p screen to basically be the shutter to stop the light is pretty ingenious, but it's not an easy trick, it sounds like.
No, and I'm not aware of another company doing it, although there is somebody claiming they've got something similar. The key with what Hisense is doing is that when they do the bonding process, they actually have this spherical material that is precisely calibrated at a certain size. It gets fed in between both panels, the panels get pressed together, bonded, and then all those beads get sucked out. And it's not easy to do because it requires a very precise evenness between both layers. But having that, it's a unique way to control the backlight that gets you closer and closer to per-pixel control, like you have with OLED screens.
It's like 4-pixel control, right? Something
and to be honest with you, on an 8K screen, 4 pixels are really, or a 4K screen, 4 pixels are pretty tiny.
Yep.
That's going to give you superb edge backlight control for things like minimizing blooming artifacts and halos and other things that really are just distracting.
Local dimming is another one of those trends that you're seeing in a lot of these TVs as well.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the things Shannon has seen. We talked about the Area 51M briefly on Monday's show, but you got up close with it.
Yeah, so for the past couple of days, I've really been focusing on video gaming because I've been doing work with NVIDIA and Alienware. So that's like the only things I've seen so far. So everything, all of my picks are video gaming. But the Alienware Area 51M, it's a 17-inch brand new design from Alienware. And what really interested me was the fact that it's fully upgradable. And it comes with desktop parts inside this rig.
Yeah,
inside of a laptop. And as far as I know, this is the only one on the market that you can do that with. You can upgrade the CPU and the GPU in this thing. And it does come with the RTX 2080 Ti, which is excellent. Comes with tons of RAM and tons of storage on the inside as well. And then it has the newest CPU options available as well. But I really enjoyed looking at the design up close because the back, like, it still has that Alienware concept, but they've really tried to influence it and make it look, like, sleeker than the current model, like this one that I have. So it has, like, a nice white, just a stark white backing plate to it, or you can get like a just simple gray one, but you can still get the RGBs as well, so you have all the rainbow colors, which I thoroughly enjoy. So it was just a very interesting laptop.
I hear modular and I think clunky. Was it?
It's big.
Okay.
It doesn't look clunky. It looks sleek.
It's a high-performance gaming notebook.
I wouldn't call it a notebook even. Like,
yeah.
They say it's mobile, not portable. It is a desktop replacement. Yeah,
it's a clamshell desktop.
It's a big device. I read online that it weighs 9 pounds, but I'm not sure if that's correct.
I saw 10.
You saw 10?
It might be like 9.8.
Yeah, so I don't know if I would necessarily take it with me to like conventions and stuff, because I'm a small girl and I don't want to hurt my back.
Mm-hmm.
But this is something that you would replace a desktop with. So pretty cool.
Lighter is a protocol that's been used in other devices. You got to see the Corsair Slipstream stuff.
That was really interesting to me, especially from like a security and privacy concept. So Slipstream is a wireless technology that Corsair came up with that they're going to be building into their new wireless products. So like they have a mouse that's coming out this year that's going to cost $50, which is pretty inexpensive for a nice quality wireless mouse. But this one, it's 2.4 gigahertz. But the reason why it's new wireless technology is because it does channel hopping. They call it something different as far as like interior design, but the way that it works is it looks for the channel on 2.4 gigahertz wireless frequencies that has the least congestion, and it'll switch to that one within a couple of milliseconds. So it also lowers your latency, which is a big issue with gamers and wireless mice, mice or mouses. So it helps with if you want to have wireless technology, but you're also a video gamer and you care about that latency and that lag, this is supposed to cut down on that. I believe that it would be more secure as well, because if you put this up against like a Wi-Fi pineapple, unless you have, you know, 45 different Wi-Fi pineapples and you're running on, it just keeps on hopping. So it would be very hard for me to control wherever it's going and be able to follow that access point, especially if it's random.
Excellent. And then finally, this is not a new product, but we talked back in September about the Acer Thronos, the big gaming chair with the multiple monitors. You got to sit in one.
I got to sit in one. It was surprisingly comfortable and kind of scary at the same time. I felt like I was in one of those, like Gundam Wing or something, like an anime about mobile suit Gundams. But it's huge, and the thing weighs tons of pounds. You have to, if you purchase one, and it costs like $10,000, and it comes with everything, including
the PC.
Cheaper
than a laser projector.
Yeah, that's true. But if you purchase one, it comes in like crates, and then you have to build it like it's a piece of IKEA furniture.
Uh-huh.
But it comes with like the monitors,
the
mouse, keyboard. It comes with the entire case next to it, and that's what you would get for $10,000. But you can change all the colors on it. It has vibration on the seat that you can sync with the video game too.
Right.
It's interesting.
Very cool. Very cool. And then, Sarah, we got to walk around on the floor a little bit finally yesterday. What are some of the things that caught your eye?
Well, the stuff that I always end up gravitating to is stuff that I can afford and stuff that actually makes a lot of sense for me in the daily life that
it's
I
not
currently
a
lead.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. The FlexiSpot is something that I actually tried out yesterday. It's a stationary bike desk combination, but it has a tiny little footprint. This is a desk that a laptop would go on. You wouldn't put a desktop on top of this. And it's pretty small, to the point where Roger said, I don't know, it might be a little flimsy for me. Well, I tried it, and it actually worked out really nicely. This is something that you can just kind of be moving while you're doing your daily stuff. I have this problem all the time because I'm at home, so I don't really want to go to the gym because I kind of got to work. And I'm not going to take my laptop to the gym, and I can't really do too much stuff on the tablet when we're preparing for the show. This is something I could put in the corner. It's $400. It's available now, and I might buy it tomorrow. Another one in the exact same vein is the walking pad. There are a few versions of this. This one is actually made by Xiaomi. $500. It's kind of hard to find a seller online, but there are certainly quite a few reviews. It was actually announced back in September that Xiaomi would be showing off the walking pad here at CES, and indeed we saw a version of this. This is a treadmill that is just for walking. In fact, it maxes out at, I think, like 3.8 miles per hour. So you're not even jogging, but you can briskly walk. I mean, if you have small legs like I do. And it sits real close to the floor. You can fold it up when you're not using it. And the idea would be, I don't know, I watch a lot of TV. I don't like to feel like a couch potato, but I can go 10 hours binging on a show. Maybe if I just unfold the walking pad and just walk while I'm watching TV, or even combine that with something like a standing desk, or even a high counter. A lot of us have little counters that we have in our kitchen that you use with higher stools.
I would totally fall down if I tried to do that.
You might, and I might too. But again, this is something it's kind of a leisurely walking thing. Instead of sitting or even standing, because a standing desk, I've tried them before, they're just not right for me. I kind of have to be moving or my back starts hurting. I would buy this. Again, $500. So it is an investment. But if you think about a gym membership or walking outside where you really can't do anything on your computer while you're doing that, I think it pays for itself really quickly.
Take notice the dog for a walk on it.
I might. Right. Yeah. Once he learns to skateboard, we'll get him a walking pad.
Excellent. Anything else that you guys, just in general impressions, not things, about CES? Because everybody always likes to say, like, oh, this CES is not as good as previous, or it's quieter than previous, or there's more stuff. What do you guys feel?
Literally everything has 2080s in them.
Yeah.
That's my feels.
Robert, what about you?
I think it's just, I'm not seeing anything dramatically different on the display side of things from last year. It's more of a refinement of what's going on, and people paying more attention to the issues that were cropping up in last year's panels, and even today, we're seeing things in certain series of TVs that it's like, why is this happening? Oh, does this also apply to the 2019 series?
Yeah.
And it's just good to see these companies at least focusing on those things and getting them nailed down and squashed so that the person who buys this has a better experience.
I don't know if it was just because we went to some different stuff. Like, we went to Spoon's Food Tech Live last night, which was really fun, but Sarah and I were talking about we're seeing more little interesting things, at least, yeah, this time,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, the pizza maker.
Yeah, the
pizza up to 700 degrees.
Does a pizza in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
From Breville, I think, yeah.
It was from Breville.
Yeah.
You don't really think of that sort of thing at CES, but I was like, that's something that I would like in my kitchen.
Yeah.
Huh.
Absolutely.
Or LG's beer maker.
Yeah, it's like an LG Pico brew, right? Yeah. There were some robotic cocktail makers that we
The Soma cocktail maker. Yeah. We tried that out last night in the name of science.
And it was just purely for review purposes.
Yeah.
So.
Pretty delicious.
Yeah, not bad. Robert, we know you got to go because everybody always has to go at CES. But thank you so much for taking some time to join us, man.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
If folks want to find your coverage of CES and your thoughts about that, where should they go?
We'll be chatting it up on AVXL.com in the coming weeks. And I'm looking forward to getting home. I need to finish my damn website, robertheron.com. Or actually, heronfidelity.com. It all goes to the same place.
Yeah, exactly. So heronfidelity.com, avxl.com for the chatting. Yeah. And Robert, man, good to see you.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care, man.
I'm out of here.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about AMD announcing the Radeon 7, the first 7-nanometer GPU marketed to consumers. Now, AMD says it should be about 25% faster than the last model at the same power consumption as its last model. The Radeon 7 has 60 compute units, speeds up to 1.8 gigahertz with 16 gigabytes of high bandwidth memory. AnandTech described the Radeon 7 as a Radeon Instinct MI50, but with a bit higher boost clock. And this one's meant for consumers. AMD CEO Lisa Su showed it running Devil May Cry 5 in 4K at 60 frames per second, and it looked pretty smooth. It arrives February 7th for $699. AMD also announced the 7-nanometer 3rd-gen Ryzen 3 chips will start shipping mid-2019. AMD ran a Cinebench test at stock frequencies that showed 30% less power draw and a slight edge in performance when you compared it to the Core i9-900K. So good chip news from AMD, keeping the competition going.
Yay!
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what to say. Like, until we actually get these things in our hands and can test them, it all sounds good.
I'm always curious about the CPUs because as a content creator, having something that's fast, efficient, and very useful is important to me. I need to be able to, you know, render and encode my videos extremely quickly.
And Beatmaster in the chat room says eGPU fodder, and that may be too. Yep. That's an interesting thought.
Exactly.
Twitter told Engadget that it will choose a few thousand people to try out new features meant to make Twitter more conversational, whatever that means. Participants will be able to share what they're trying out with their followers and give feedback back to Twitter about how well these tools are working. Twitter will start testing the program in the coming weeks.
That's not vague at all.
No, I know. Hey, we want it to be more conversational. Okay.
It's already... So I use it as a conversation.
It's funny. There's so much... Twitter has this barrier to entry thing going on.
Hi, this is Matt.
And Sean.
From Two Black Guys.
With good credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, Visit stripe.com/tapiphone. This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Right now on a special edition of Tools and Weapons, Brad Smith is sharing a vision for what Microsoft calls the new AI economy. It's an idea rooted in technological revolutions of the past, like the printing press, which created a vibrant marketplace of related innovations, ultimately leading to an explosion of books and readers. But he doesn't just give a history lesson. In the episode, Brad lays out the tangible ways that Microsoft is providing infrastructure and other support to those leading the charge of the new AI economy. And he explains the importance of using that infrastructure to ensure equitable access to AI to people all over the world. To stay current on insights from voices at the center of the conversation on AI, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you like to listen.
And I'm sure that's true. And in fact, I know it's true for a lot of my non-technical friends that go, Twitter, I don't really get it. Well, we all get it. Mm-hmm. So when I hear, okay, we want to make this more conversational, it's like, okay, well, is that a tool that's going to help me? Because a lot of these more conversational tools I actually find annoying, mm-hmm. which is why I don't use web Twitter. I use a third-party application for Twitter.
Right.
Because I find a lot of that, I don't know, distracting more than anything. But Twitter's always trying things out.
Yeah, so they're going to try some different ways of doing threading. Like if you want to have a conversation, then make it a little more compact so that it doesn't just populate your timeline with even with the thread, the collapsed thread. They're going to do some more things to make that more efficient. And a status feature where you can say, I'm at CES instead of, you know, and that just automatically pins at the top, stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see, I think, what they come up with.
You know, Twitter, this is unrelated to this particular announcement, but the company also announced that they're going to be showing the second half of NBA games, except which you go, okay, well, you know, sometimes the second half is the most exciting half, but it's all going to be focused on one particular player. So it's like, okay, that's something that I would want, but then something that I would not want.
It's a vote, too. Like, you vote in the first half, which player will be focused on in the second half.
And sure, if I'm watching my favorite team, I probably have a favorite player, and maybe I'm kind of looking for that player most of the time, but I'm not going to bag on the experiment before I've seen it, but it sounds like something that is something that no one asked for.
It's novel. Maybe they'll like it, but nobody asked for it. Bloomberg reported that Samsung is among the companies with agreements to sell their phones with Facebook pre-installed, and the story notes that you can't delete the Facebook app when it comes pre-installed like that. You can only disable it. And a lot of people started freaking out, like, so they'll be tracking me because it's Facebook.
Well, they'll be listening.
Yeah. The Next Web's Ivan Mehta points out that the pre-installed app isn't the Facebook app. It's a placeholder manager installer stub. And app researcher Jane Wong notes that it is a non-functional empty shell that doesn't collect any data. The only thing it does is install Facebook. So if you disable it, it basically uninstalls Facebook and leaves the shell hidden. But the shell doesn't do anything.
It sounds almost like in Windows having like downloading an executable, but not actually running the executable. You just leave it on your desktop.
Well, it's even less than that.
Yeah.
Because there's not even an executable of Facebook there. Mm-hmm. It's just an installer app, basically.
Or Deb. Sounds kind of like a Deb too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, when it comes to Facebook, people tend to get a little bit out of shape whenever something is... If it could be a lot of different companies, and sure, it might have the same effect, but when it's Facebook, people go, well, hold on a second. I can't uninstall Facebook. They're going to be listening to my conversations. Electrify America and Hubject plan to roll out plug-and-charge functionality to more than 2,000 public fast-charging stations in the U.S. by the end of the year. Electric vehicles that meet ISO 15118 standards can use vehicle-to-grid communications to authenticate and pay for a charging session just by plugging in the car with no need to use a credit card or an app.
Huh.
Wow.
Yeah, that's going to be cool to have. And the Indemnus Parachute for Drones has been certified to let operators legally fly over small groups of people. The parachute for DJI straps on to the DJI drone and then deploys when the sensor detects flight anomalies. The company had to pass 45 functionality tests, including 5 different scenarios of failure, to assure that it will deploy when it's needed. The Indemnus Nexus parachute is available right now for the DJI Inspire 2 and should come to the Matrice 200 and 600 series by the end of the year.
Well, I still don't think you should fly your drone over groups of people just because it's kind of rude, but this would be very useful for an event.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're like a concert organizer and you are the media for that event, you probably want to use a drone to get those shots.
Or if the people are part of the shoot and they know it's going over, you know, maybe it's a commercial or something. Folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day, don't forget Rich Truffolino has been doing the Lord's work, keeping us up to date in less than 5 minutes every day on what's happening at CES. Go subscribe at DailyTechHeadlines.com. All right, a couple things to explain outside of CES before we wrap up today. Last year, all four U.S. mobile carriers promised to stop selling customer location data to shady companies after Securus, a prison technology company, was caught using the data without customer permission. Well, yesterday, Motherboard reported that it was able to pay a third party $300 in order to locate a phone on T-Mobile's network using real-time location data from the carrier. Mobile carriers sell information to location aggregators, and they haven't stopped doing that. They just said that they would do it more responsibly. The idea is that they could then sell the anonymized aggregated data to companies who want to gain insights into general population movement. They're not supposed to track individuals with that. T-Mobile sells data to an aggregator company called Zoomago. Zoomago sold access to the data to a company called Microbuilt. In the Motherboard case, Microbuilt then sold the data to a bail bond company that shared it with a bail industry source who shared it with Motherboard. AT&T, Sprint, and T-Mobile have all said that reselling in this manner violates its contracts and policies. All carriers require clients to get consent from people before tracking them. And Microbuilt says it requires that too and has terminated access for the person who passed the information to Motherboard. And in addition, Zoomago has cut off Microbuilt's access to its data. AT&T has also blocked data from going to Microbuilt. So depending on how you look at this, it's either they are not keeping track of what happens to the data downstream close enough, which is what Motherboard contends, or somebody who uses this legitimately, like a bail bondsman would get permission from you to say, like, okay, we'll put up the bail bond money if you let us track your phone. We'll send you a text. You would consent. Somebody used that with Motherboard without consent in order to show that it could be done.
Such a complicated daisy chain thing going on.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy for a company to say, all right, well, we're going to cut off access to this company. But these are companies that most of us have never heard of, are not familiar with, don't know who works there. Who's to say you don't just make a new contract with another company that does something similar?
Yeah.
Until someone like Motherboard notices that, and then we get another article about
it. And the thing is, I don't think some people will not be okay with this, but a lot of people are okay as long as consent is involved.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are reasons, like the bail bond thing. If that makes it easier to get your bond put up, then you're like, yes, please track me. I need to be bailed out. But they're not putting the controls in place. It's kind of the same thing as Cambridge Analytica. They're saying, hey, they told us they wouldn't abuse it, but nobody was checking.
I agree with Motherboard on this. It does sound like they were very irresponsible with the data handling. And I remember when this first came out, the information about how all of the wireless carriers were doing this last year. And it was kind of scary to think that, but you have no way as a consumer to turn that off. And if it was something that you could
unless
you just don't have a wireless phone.
Yeah.
Just go, I don't know, live in a tiny home in the woods.
Right. No, it's supposed to be opt-in. You're not supposed to be able to use it.
Yeah, it should be.
But you can't stop the data from existing.
Exactly.
And when it gets downstream away from the carrier, then
so it just kind of it puts a bad taste in my mouth, the whole thing.
Spit that out.
Apple CEO Tim Cook appeared on CNBC's Mad Money program to let people know that the company will launch new services this year. The most obvious service for Apple to launch would be that TV service, given the billions they've spent on, as yet, unreleased original programming and the appearance of iTunes TV and movies on Samsung TVs. We talked about that earlier this week. He also said he thought people in the future would call health Apple's greatest contribution to humankind, implying perhaps some kind of health-related service coming down the pipe. He also reiterated that the iPhone XR has been the most popular iPhone every day since launch, and the Apple Watch and AirPods bring in more money than the iPod ever did. Kind of an interesting stat. On a related note, Nikkei reports its sources say Apple has reduced planned production of iPhones by 10% in Q1 of this year.
We've sort of beaten the phone horse dead in the past few days about what's going on there.
Yep.
So the services thing is interesting. Like I'm like, great. Are you going to come up with a really cool use for HealthKit later this year? I'm interested in that. Whatever the TV service is, I'm absolutely interested in that. I think the funniest thing about this story is Sarah, Roger, and I were walking back to our hotel, and we saw Tim Cook on screen with the Mad Money logo, and we're like, that must be just a rebroadcast. He wouldn't be talking to Mad Money, would he?
Again.
Well, yeah. No, he was.
Wow.
Right.
Interesting.
Well, so we'll obviously be following up that story during 2019. Go Health. Thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You keep our brains healthy by submitting stories and voting on others at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We're also on Facebook. If you like Facebook groups, well, have we got a group for you? Facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow.
We couldn't finish the show without checking the mailbag. We got some CES-related emails from you. Thanks for keeping them coming, folks. What do we got to talk about, Sarah?
So Graham, who's a Patreon supporter, thank you, Graham, wrote in about our conversation yesterday about the Motive Rings adding payment options. Graham says, I'm listening to CES Day 2 podcast on my morning tube ride. I'm in London. Heard you mention the update to add payment features to Motive Rings. For the last 18 months, I've been using Daily, another payment ring from Curve at mykring.com. It has a virtual MasterCard attached to the account, allows contactless payment or tap-to-tap at businesses that accept Apple Pay and the like. It also works on the London Underground and the bus network. Very convenient and particularly handy during the winter months when you are all rugged up with coats and gloves that make it problematic to get to your physical wallet. The Curve doesn't have onboard authentication, so it's exactly the same as the chip and pin credit debit card in terms of security. If the ring is lost or stolen, you can disassociate the connection between the ring and the card.
And I emailed with him because I wanted to ask him about the security function, because the whole thing with the Motive is that it uses your pulse. It uses your heart
That's
rate
what my question
as your authentication, which is really interesting
it
way
is,
to do it.
It's very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is cool. This sounds like way cooler than even the Japanese system.
Yeah. No, this is great. So Graham even said, like, man, if the Motive comes to my market, I might dump the Curve for that because it's a little more secure. Well, thanks again to Robert Herron for joining us today. HerronFidelity.com, AVXL.com. And thank you, Shannon Morse. Good to see you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
If folks want to keep up on what you're doing here at CES and stuff, where should they go?
I am doing a lot of social media stuff. So I'm Instagram and Twitter at Snubs, S-N-U-B-S. Very easy. And techthing.com. We are posting videos every single day that we are here. We're hoping to get at least 10 videos out during the course of the week, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But we're trying to see as much as possible. So techthing.com or youtube.com/techthing is the place to see that.
And of course, as we mentioned, the only reason we're able to be here is because you support the show in the various ways that we describe at dailytechnewsshow.com/support. We have a little video there now. If you're like, how can I support DTNS? Go to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. Just watch the video. If you support us on Patreon, which is our biggest funder, people who stay with Patreon at a particular tier for 3 months right now will get merchandise with Len Peralta's 5-year anniversary art on it. If you're at the co-executive producer or analyst level for 3 months, you get a sticker. Advisors get a poster. And if you're at the master level, stay at that tier for 3 months, you'll get a mug. You can find out all about that at patreon.com/DTNS/merch.
If you want to talk to us, well, our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Keep those emails coming. They're great. We're also live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC. Please join us live if you can. It's a lot of fun. You can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
We'll be back from Los Angeles tomorrow and talking to Justin Robert Young. See you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.